Professor Dumbledore has granted me permission to start this little dueling club.
And with that, welcome to the Dueling Club, learning one spell at a time.
Hello, friends. It is us, the Dueling Club. I'm Al.
And I'm Jen. And we are both exhausted.
Yes.
Yeah. So, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm all right. Why are you exhausted?
Went to sleep late.
Were you busy doing something?
Yes, I was talking to some friends of mine, and we had interesting conversation that we just lost track of time.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
I'm glad you got to talk to your friends, and the conversation was so good that you forgot about time. That's always good, to be around people or communicating with people that make you feel like, I could just do this for hours.
Yep.
That's awesome.
It was very sweeping. We talked about turkey. We talked about video games.
The country or the food?
The food.
Okay.
Because of Thanksgiving.
I mean, technically you could talk about the country too. There's a lot to talk about
turkey. I am not learned in turkey.
They make delicious candy. Turkish delights. Awesome. Anyway, continue.
But that's why I went to sleep late. And why are you tired?
So the wedding was on Friday.
Yep.
And that was until a little bit after midnight. And then we were awake until almost 3 o'clock in the morning. Again, just hanging out with the boyfriend and his brother and his brother's fiance and his cousin and his cousin's girlfriend. We were just, again, in good company, enjoying ourselves, and we lost track of time until somebody started leaning and darn near touching the floor because they were falling asleep.
Nice.
And they were like, okay, we need to go. And then we were at a hotel, and we checked out, and then we hung out some more and went to lunch, late breakfast, early lunch.
Yes, elevensies.
Yeah. Elevensies. But it was more like onesies.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, we had all woken up at like 11. So yeah. It makes sense. And because we had partied so hard on Friday, once we were done having lunch, we went home and went to sleep pretty much the rest of the day. So I'm tired because I think I may have overslept. But part of me wants to sleep more.
That's an interesting thing that the human body does.
Yeah. I'm not super duper young anymore. And my body requires a little bit more time to recuperate after things. And honestly, I've been going nonstop since the end of September. So my body really just wants to stop.
Yeah. Usually breaks are nice. I mean, we've had a couple of breaks, but like, I don't know. A break unto yourself versus taking a break because of other reasons.
Yeah.
You know, they're different things.
Very different things. Very much so. Like, I just want to take a day where I don't have to do anything and I can just, you know, enjoy a no bones day.
But of course.
Yes. But it was great. The wedding was awesome. The food was really yummy. Again, another really nice wedding where the food was spectacular.
I mean, typically, food at weddings should be pretty good because they cost a lot.
Agreed, but I've been to some weddings before where the food was just all right. Weird. All right to bad, you know? Yeah. This one was really good.
Can I be real?
Yes.
I understand that, like, typically it's like you get your plate. You like, say, oh, there's like the thing with the protein and you check it or whatever and you get that. And
oh,
you
that's
get,
like, the way it used to be.
Yeah. I would just do, like, a buffet thing, bro. Make your life easy.
So.
I'd have, like, 3 long table things just full of the same kinds of food across all 3. And just serve yourself whatever you want. I don't care, bro.
So the way that this one was, and the last one was the same way too, is that's kind of the way the cocktail hour is, where they have all different kinds of foods and stations, and you can just grab what you want and you're good.
Yeah.
That's the cocktail hour. The food itself, they do a served service, you know, like 4 or 5 course service, depending on the place. And it's like, you get to pick on that day what you want as your entree.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, obviously they've made enough and they just bring it to you.
Like beforehand, it was like with your RSVP, potentially, yes, you'd have to like, you know, I want this or this, whatever. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they give you like 4 or 5 different options to pick for your entree that day. And you, and they come by and ask you, hey, what do you want?
Yeah.
And if there's a steak option, which there almost always is, they ask you how you want your steak cooked.
Yeah.
And that's about it. And so it was a lot of stuff. And the dessert, the cake was really yummy. And it was like a vanilla cake with a pineapple, like jammy thing in the middle. It was, I would say vanilla because it was just like a white cake. It wasn't like super duper fancy,
yeah,
but it was decorated very nicely. But they had a dessert station. They had like 4 dessert tables. And they had cannolis and the little elephant ears and the this and the that. Like all the pastries you can think of.
I feel like I'm just incorrect for not liking cannolis.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's the short answer.
I just think that there are like a multitude of better dessert options than cannoli.
I will agree with you. These cannolis were yummy. Okay. They weren't the best cannolis I've ever had, but they definitely weren't the worst. You know?
Fair enough.
If you're going to give me my pick of pastries,
yeah,
I'm not going to pick a cannoli. That's not the first one.
Exactly.
But I do enjoy them.
Okay.
If they're available. Anyway, but yeah, we had a great time and it was really nice. And I'm a crier. So I cried like 4 or 5 times, whatever. No big deal. I did that at the last wedding too.
I mean, it's an emotionally charged event.
Yes. And I love love. I think that we should always celebrate love, especially in times of great difficulty. Love is the thing.
So.
Yes.
You are watching Naruto.
Yeah, I've already watched all of Naruto, and I'm watching Shippuden now.
Yeah, that, yeah. The original one doesn't count. That's okay. like chump change kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm at the point. So Hulu has them, yeah, and they have the dubbed and the subbed. I'm at the level where it's just all subtitles.
Yeah. So the reason why I bring it up is because there's a character later on who has a speech about how like everything in the world is done because of hatred. Where it's like, hate exists to protect love, and all wars are based in trying to protect love and stuff. Like, where there are victors, there are the vanquished. Where is light, there is darkness. Like, but okay, people fool themselves into thinking that it's because of the light that we do the things that we do, but it's really the hate that we feel or whatever.
I think it's the opposite.
But yeah, okay. That's what I'm saying. Like, everything... That has any kind of conflict that has ever been had on this planet is because of love, not necessarily a positive version of it.
Right.
A love of power, a love of position, a love of territory, money, a love of conquest. Like there's there's so many reasons, but there's also like think of like Helen of Troy kind of situation.
Yes.
Like
that was straight up love.
Exactly.
Obsessive love a little bit. But yeah.
But love is a powerful thing.
Yes.
But I do also believe that hate is a powerful thing, and hate and love are two sides of the same coin.
I don't necessarily think that they're two sides of the same coin. I think that if you're going to talk about love's actual opposite, I think the actual opposite of love would be indifference.
Not necessarily about opposites, but that,
okay,
that when you go beyond, when you go over the edge of love, it can become something similar to hate.
I can see your point of view. I can give you an example. Okay.
You are totally in love with someone that it becomes obsession. You've gone beyond love. You hate the fact that they're not yours. You know what I mean?
Okay.
In a weird, twisted way, it kind of makes sense.
I guess. I'm not 100% on that train of thought with you, but I can see it.
I'm not one who believes in that.
Okay.
I'm saying I'm one who can understand. Like, I like to understand people, as do you.
Yes.
And so that's one of the viewpoints I see with some people that I've come across.
Okay. Again, I think that I can see where they're coming from, mm-hmm. but I think that their underlying premise is incorrect because, again, the opposite, the antithesis of love would be indifference, mm-hmm. where you care about someone so much and then you fall out of love with them mm-hmm. and now you just don't feel anything for them. Whereas you felt strongly about them before, now you just don't. To me, that would be the opposite.
It's not about opposites. It's about the fact that they're...
I think the obsession...
Over the edge of love.
I think the... Over the edge of love would be obsession.
Yeah.
But obsession doesn't necessarily lean towards hate. Obsession is obsession. You know, it's just... It's neither... It can be good or bad. You know? If you're obsessed with someone, with something, you might push yourself really hard to acquire that something. And I mean, like, power. You're in a company, you're an underling, you want power, you're going to push yourself to move up in the company. That's not necessarily a bad thing. What you do to push yourself up might be a bad thing. Just like you may be obsessed with the idea of being with someone, and you're like, okay, I'm going to... Crazy things. I'm going to exercise and lose 100 pounds so that then I'll be the perfect person for them.
You also bring up the popular Netflix show You, I think it's called.
Oh, I didn't watch it.
Well, it's about a guy who becomes obsessive when he falls in love.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, murders people who gets in the way.
Yeah, no, that's not good. Well, that's the bad side of it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is, like, so you know how you mentioned the corporate job thing that you feel like you want to climb? You hate the fact that you don't have the position you feel like you deserve.
Yes.
And so you go to extremes. I think that's like the love of power created a kind of hate. It's a weird, like, almost anime-y kind of logic, but I feel like it applies to some very, like, mentally unstable people.
See, but that's when we're going outside of the...
That's what I'm talking about, though. I'm not, you're taking it from a totally logical standpoint. I'm not...
Okay. That's okay, if we take logic out of it, then I guess I can see how that works, but yeah. I don't subscribe. Unfollow.
Yeah, but you're also you're like a fairly, like, linear cause to effect kind of person.
Yes.
Whereas when you take away, like, mental stability, like, you're going like this.
Yes.
You're like fanning your hand to find an outcome kind of thing.
Yes.
So
I think that... So again, going back to the original thing you were saying,
yes.
I think that character from Shippuden, I don't know yeah. who it is. I guess I haven't gotten there yet.
It's a Uchiha.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay. So then, yes, I have gotten there. Okay. I'm past there. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm at the point where the episodes are no longer dubbed.
I don't know where that breakpoint is, dude.
Episode 180, 190, 100.
I don't think you're there. With Madara? I don't think you're there.
I am. Yes.
You haven't gotten to that speech then because that's...
No, I might have... Again, I watched it like a few months ago mm-hmm. and I've been watching other stuff since.
Well, you know, so I could have forgotten it. The speech is in English. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Let's continue. Doesn't matter.
I subscribe to the fact that we do everything for love.
Yes. Period. Anyway. And this Harry Potter, this whole series,
is based on that. Yes.
It's based on, you know, a mother sacrificed herself for her child because of love.
Well, I had to try and explain to someone why Harry Potter was so impactful. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, if you're 30 years old watching it for the first time, it doesn't have the same impact as you watching it, you know, when you were younger and, like, the nostalgia of it. And I'm like, I don't agree. Because we're talking about something that is, like, a magical experience when you're a child, but something that is, like, a very real, like, thing. Like, it has to do with, like, racism. It has to do with like, very adult subjects.
Mm-hmm.
That underlined the magical fantasy of it all.
So our old boss, our old manager, one that we shared.
Yes.
She had not watched it until a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And she watched the first movie and was like, okay, this is kind of like more of a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Although it's got some elements to it that I was able to enjoy it and it made me want to watch the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then I binged watched the rest of them. And now I'm reading all the books.
Yeah.
As a 30-something-year-old.
Yeah.
Because of the elements that you mentioned. It's not... Yes, it was written as a child's... children's literature. But the matters that it deals with aren't just matters of children. Like, it's not just, oh, yeah, there's a snake. No, the snake was put there by somebody who was deranged and wanted to get rid of at least half of the wizarding population because they didn't meet the standards that they thought were I don't know, necessary to be a witch or wizard.
So,
like, this person espoused genocide.
Yeah. So This is a way that I can put it that's like a way for you to think about. So the first movie or book is very magical, is like a story of friendship, right?
Yes.
And how friendship can help you overcome.
And how Dumbledore tells us, and it's all love.
Yeah, yeah. But then if you look at it as an adult, it's a story. The first one is a story of loss. It's a child who, above all else, wishes he had his parents and his family.
And then you find out why he doesn't have his parents and his family.
So as an adult, you can really appreciate that because it's a very emotional subject. And I feel like as adults, we play more towards emotion because like we've lived, we have experiences. Yeah. We maybe have not had like emotional things like that. But there, I mean, if you're an adult, then you have probably at some point experienced loss of some kind.
Well, and it's also how it
leaves a void that you want filled or that you try to fill and that you just can't. No one can replace James and Lily for Harry.
Right. But it's also, it's not just a story about his loss. Uh-huh. It's a story about him trying to find his place just in general. He doesn't have a family of his own, and the family he grew up in, he doesn't actually have a place there. They actively ignore him or remove him from situations. Like, the only reason he's at the zoo with Dudley and his friend is because
they couldn't find a babysitter to throw him away to, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only reason he got ice cream is because it was originally Dudley's and it didn't have enough of something.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just handed it to him like, whatever, you can have this.
And the reason why he had like the lemon drop ice cream or a popsicle, whatever, is because the lady asked too quick before he could be pushed away by Uncle Vernon.
Yeah. And the only reason he has clothes is because it's clothes that Dudley grew out of.
Yeah. So that's the thing is that, by the way, we've mentioned it before. But it makes me so sad to think of, like, all of his firsts, like, with an indifferent family.
Yeah.
The first time he got, like, a 100 or an A on a paper. The first time that...
The first time
he drew something that he was proud of. The first time that he probably would never... He probably doesn't know how to ride a bike.
The first time he read a book.
Yeah. Uncle Vernon would never put the effort to teach him how to ride a bike. But... Imagine the envy he has because it happened with Dudley, probably.
Yeah.
Like,
we did talk about that.
Yeah, I know we did. It makes me sad to think, I don't know, that's something that may, like an adult who's watching or reading it may think about. They'll put it down and be like, oh my God, this child never has been praised in his entire life until he's introduced to the wizarding world. And now everyone... Well, not everyone. They either adore him or hate him.
Well, everyone knows who he is.
Yes.
He doesn't even know who he is yet. And everyone knows who he is. And on top of that, now he's never had a place in the Muggle world. Now he has to actively find his place in the magical world.
Which is inviting.
Yeah. But it's like, how is he supposed to find his place in the magical world if he's new to it? And then he meets these people who like him for who he is, like just Harry. And then they're like, oh yeah, you're that Harry Potter? Oh snap. And then they're just friends forever.
Yeah. Anyway.
But
we've talked about a gambit of things.
We have, but I think it bears to be said that if you're new to the series, whether it's via the books or the movies or both, don't feel like, oh my goodness, I'm this old and I'm just getting here, or oh goodness, I'm this old.
You're not too late.
You're not too late. The Hogwarts Express is still waiting for you every September 1st. I'm just saying. And there's something to be gotten out of every book, out of every movie, and different things with every movie and every book, no matter what age you are. Do you know what I want to get mom for Christmas this year?
What?
So every year I get her a few books in Spanish because our mother's first language is Spanish and she likes to read. Which is why we have our love of reading.
Yes.
Because dad does not like to read.
No.
So, I haven't gotten her a few. I didn't get any last year, I don't think, or this year so far. I think I'm going to start getting her the Harry Potter books in Spanish. So that she can understand what it is that we love about it so much. Because she's watched pretty much every movie with us, whether it's in the movie theater or here at home, because we watch them all the time.
Well, there's a disconnect when
she'll ask us, why is that old guy talking to that little kid? And it's like, why is Dumbledore talking to Harry, mom? Because they're kind of major characters.
Because they're homies, man.
Yeah. But I want her to understand, and I want her to get it, and I understand I'm going to have to be like, I get that this is, you know, a technically a fantasy story, and it's a kid's story, but it's not at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to get her for Christmas. Shh, don't tell her. I don't think any of you are going to be like, oh, hey, Jen and Al's mom, they're getting you Harry Potter books for Christmas. Harry Potter books in Spanish for Christmas.
But I guess thanks for being thorough.
Yes.
Anywho. Harry Potter. We talk about it.
We've been talking about it this whole time.
About what? The thingy.
Oh, Silence yes, you. That thing. So, we are in season 5.
Yes.
Episode 20. And we're going to be going over chapter 19... called The Lion and the Serpent. Okay, so Harry is pleased with Dumbledore's army's progress.
We need to recap.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Recap, Al. Go.
Okay. So, basically, the trio is under the assumption that Umbridge is monitoring all communication in and out of the castle. The reason why they assume this is because of Hedwig's injury and then Filch's dung bomb report.
And the fact that they literally just watched her try to snatch Sirius from out the fire.
Also true. Yeah. Gryffindor quitted Stream Reformation.
Which was the last House Quidditch team to reform because Umbridge is a evil woman.
Yes.
And I think she's just doing it on purpose because Harry's involved.
Yes. But, I mean, you don't think, you know.
No, I know.
Okay. Anyway.
I think it's so funny. Have you seen the meme that's been circulating Facebook forever where it's like,
do you think you're going to be attacked in my classroom?
Yes. What? That one.
Well, I mean,
it would be five for five.
Yeah.
And he goes through, hello, Quirrell had Voldemort on the back of his head.
Yeah.
Gilderoy Lockhart tried to obliterate my memory.
Yeah, Lupin wasn't too bad.
Lupin was great, but he didn't do it on purpose, but he totally wolfed out on me.
Yeah.
And the last one was a Death Eater in disguise.
Yeah. So.
So, and then he gives the maths and he's like, Hermione, did I get the maths right? She's like, yes. I love it.
Yes.
Because it's like, yeah. Yeah. I really think you're going to attack him.
It literally is a thing.
Yeah.
Dobby is only one who cleans the Gryffindor common room because of Hermione's
sneaky little clothing. Yeah.
And then Dobby tells Harry about the room requirement. They go and inspect it, and it's like an actual thing.
But Harry already knew about it because Dumbledore mentioned it during the Yule Ball that one day he needed to go to the bathroom, and he stumbled upon a room filled with beautiful chamber pots.
Yes. So everyone who signed the form at the Hogshead show up for their lesson. They learn the Expelliarmus. It's very spicy. Practice goes well.
Why is it so spicy? I made you smile. That's it. I'm good.
Anyway. Yeah. The first meeting goes well and they want to plan more.
Yes.
Chapter recap end.
Okay.
So
Harry and they named it Dumbledore's Army.
Yes.
They wanted to do the Defense Association or something. And they're like, no.
Umbridge League.
Yeah. And then they're like, no, let's name it Dumbledore's Army because that's what they fear.
Yeah, exactly. Let's name it the thing they fear the most.
Yes.
Anyway, as you said, Harry is pleased with the DA's progress and he takes great pleasure in flouting Umbridge's regulations.
I mean, she did make educational decree, what was it, 25?
24.
24. Literally oh, yes. Them. That was the name of that.
Yes.
Where they're like, no groups can meet without Dolores Umbridge's approval.
Yes. With various team Quidditch practices, it is difficult to have a regular night for Dumbledore's army to meet. But Hermione has a solution. She gives everyone fake galleons that transmit messages.
Oh, I need to read this part.
Don't worry, you got this.
Okay.
Harry can use them to summon them for the next meeting. And then...
She actually says... She hands them out. And Ron becomes very excited when he sees the basket at first, convinced that she was actually giving out gold. You see the numerals around the edge of the coins? On real galleons, that's just a serial number referring to the goblin who cast the coin. On these fake coins, though, the numbers will change to reflect the time and date for the next meeting. The coins will grow hot when the date changes, so if you're carrying them in a pocket, you'll be able to feel them. We take one each, and when Harry sets the date of the next meeting, he'll change the numbers on his coin. And because I've put a protean charm on them, they'll all change to mimic his. And then she gets a blank silence from everyone.
Yes.
And it's followed with a comment from Terry Boot. You can do a protean charm? And she's like, yes. He's like, but that's NEWT standard, Newt standard.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, well, yes, I suppose it is. He's like, how come you're not in Ravenclaw? Yeah.
So
our girl should be in Ravenclaw.
So the thing is that it's basically a high schooler being able to do like practically college level stuff.
Yes.
And that's why it's so surprising.
Yes. But they should have known that because, or somebody should have told them about her, because she was on the train as an 11-year-old doing magic, repairing Harry's glasses on the train.
I ask you.
Yes.
Is obviously she's doing it in this situation because it's something that is relevant to this, to what's going on.
Yes.
And it makes the plot be able to proceed in like a very smooth way.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if she feels like she can do too much, Hermione sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a bad thing because there is someone who has to be like the brains mm-hmm. of any in any given situation.
Yes.
You have to have that one friend who's like, maybe this is a bad idea. That's the smart person in the group.
And she tends to be the one to say, I don't necessarily think this is a good idea.
Exactly. But she it's very convenient that she always has a solution for something. Almost always.
Well, she is also the one who, in her second year, as a 12-year-old, started brewing polyjuice potion.
Yes.
That most adults can't do correctly because it has too many steps and things.
I think that it's really just because, like, most, like, adult wizards, witches and wizards, are just, like, kind of lazy a little bit. Because they're so used to, like, casting a spell to, like, for something to be done. But potion making is really sitting there and stirring the right way a certain amount of times, counting it, stopping, going the other way. Oh, now I have to wait 2 weeks on the dot to come back and add new ingredients.
And only put a teaspoon of this.
Exactly. They're not used to like minute details and like waiting and being patient. They're not. That's a fact.
True.
Like, Arthur Weasley is just like, oh, well, this is going to take forever to go on the underground, but he's still fascinated because he is himself, and he's like, turnstiles are revolutionary.
But you people have figured everything out. But the machine's broken, but it's still fascinating.
Exactly. But picture it this way. You're a witch or wizard who can apparate and get somewhere to almost instantly.
Yes.
Who wants to drive an hour?
I wouldn't.
Okay, so let's say you're Molly Weasley and you're cooking something. Why would you spend the extra effort to cook more of it if you can just duplicate it?
Yeah.
So I think that's why like potions are really hard for witches and wizards.
They just don't know delayed gratification then.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is so like their potion isn't done within 10 minutes of brewing. Well, Jesus Christ, I can't do it.
Merlin's beard, I can't do it.
Exactly. That's the vibe I get, at least, from it. Because when they're like, oh, it's 27 ingredients, I'm like, bro, when I cook anything, it's like roughly that. Seasonings and making sure I have everything right. Like,
have you made a lasagna recently?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, those take forever. They're delicious and they look pretty simplistic.
Yes.
But
that's what I'm saying, is that witches and wizards are lazy.
I think that's part of the problem. I also really do think she's just really good at stuff. Part of it being because she does plot read a lot. Well, yes, part of it is definitely plot convenience. But part of it is she's that person. She likes to read. She likes to learn. She likes to figure out a problem. You know, this is the way that she is.
True.
And Terry Boot is like, why aren't you in Ravenclaw? And she's like, no, the Sorting Hat thought about putting me there. But after all, it said Gryffindor.
Yes. So the first Quidditch match is approaching, and Ron is a nervous wreck. Their opponent is Slytherin, which we know Slytherin love to antagonize Gryffindor in every way at all times.
Before we get there. Before we go there, I do want to point out the reason why she thought to use the coins. She actually said, and because Harry points it out to her, that it reminds him of the Death Eater scar.
Yep.
Where, you know, Voldemort touches one of them and all of them have to, their scars burn and they all go to where he is. And Hermione actually very quietly says, that is where I got the idea.
But instead of branding each member...
Yeah.
I decided to keep it as coins. It's probably a little less invasive.
You know? And Harry's like, yeah, I prefer your way.
Yeah. So their opponent is Slytherin, and the students are wearing badges reading, Weasley is our king.
Oh, no.
It is a cruel effort to undermine Ron's confidence by implying he will win the game for Slytherin with his poor keeping skills.
Yeah.
During the game, Slytherin students sing, Weasley is our king, to further unnerve him, which the song... Can you pull it up and give it a go?
Where is it? I'm looking.
It's so mean. It's so mean.
So I see the badges. It says Weasley is our king.
Uh-huh. It's its own little stanza thing.
I'm looking.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Yep.
And I'm not going to sing it.
Okay, okay, just read it. It
says, Weasley cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. That's why Slytherins all sing, Weasley is our king.
Yep.
That's all you get. Weasley was born in a bin. No, he wasn't. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley will make sure we win. Weasley is our king. And then it goes, Weasley is our king. Weasley is our king. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley is our king.
Yeah.
He cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. Weasley was born in a bin. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley is our king. It's like, it just keeps going over and over and over again.
Listen, it's mean, but it's so catchy.
Malfoy did a good job.
Yes,
because you know it was him.
Yeah, yeah, he takes credit for it later.
Yes.
It apparently
even works. Before he takes credit for it, you knew it was him.
It apparently works, as Ron plays badly, missing several shots, but Harry catches a snitch, winning the game for Gryffindor.
Yes.
After the game, Harry, already angry after Crabbe hit him with a bludger after the final whistle. Which is so unsportsmanlike, by the way.
Yes.
Which, surprise, I guess, not really. Harry and George Weasley jump Malfoy and his cronies for mocking Ron, only to be forcibly restrained from them by, like... I think the rest of the team hold Fred back, and it's someone else who... is it Hagrid or something? Or who is it?
Huh?
Who is it that stops Harry and George from destroying Malfoy?
Well, I just saw where the bludger hits him.
Yeah.
Squarely in the small of his back. That's annoying. Fred and Weasley leave it. Harry grabbed hold of George.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, it was taking the combined efforts of Angelina, Alicia, and Katie to stop Fred.
Yeah.
Harry looked around for Madame Hooch, but she was still berating Crabbe for his illegal bludger attack. Or perhaps you can remember what your mother's house stank like, Potter, and Weasley's pigsty reminds you of it. And he doesn't remember releasing George, but he sure did.
Yep.
Malfoy yelling, impedimenta, and only when he was knocked over backwards by the force. Somebody in the vicinity, it says.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Oh, and then Madame Hooch says, what do you think you're doing?
Okay, okay.
So we don't know if it was her, but somebody in the vicinity, impedimenta, and knocked them all back.
Yeah, my thing is like, what I remember my mental image of it was, is Harry and George beating the crap out of Malfoy. Yes. And then Hagrid, like, pulling them back, like, what are you doing?
Might be the movie.
No, and it doesn't happen in the movie. It's literally just my mental, like, canon thing that I have.
Or is it a Mandela effect?
I don't think so. I think it's my brain just trying to, like, make sense of the scene. Because it's if you read that scene,
mm-hmm.
it's very, like, almost over Harry's shoulder, but also seeing through his eyes in a way.
Yes.
So it's like blurry almost in my brain.
Yes.
And Hagrid, it's to me, seems like the one who could stop them because they're so mad.
Yeah, but Hagrid wasn't there yet.
No, I know, I know.
Yeah.
I know that he appears at the end of the chapter. Surprise, spoiler.
How dare you? How dare you, sir? No. You don't get to be called sir anymore. How dare you?
Oh.
Because that is something you should not have said.
Rude.
No, yes, you are rude.
True. Anyway, but that's just how I remember imagining it before.
Yeah. But
Hagrid isn't there.
If he had been there, he would have.
Yeah.
He would have been the one to actually stop it before it went
too far because he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Or he would have been warned by Dumbledore, Umbridge is not to be trifled with.
Yes.
And she will step in somehow.
And step in she does eventually.
Very, very now, actually.
Yes.
Let's see.
McGonagall
hauls them into her office and assigns each a week's detention. However, Umbridge...
Hold on. Yes. Before we get there. She says, well, I have never seen such a disgraceful exhibition. Two onto one. Explain yourselves. And Harry says, Malfoy provoked us. And she's like, provoked you? Really? Mm-hmm. He'd just lost, hadn't he? Of course he wanted to provoke you. But what on earth... what on earth he could have said that justified what you two? He insulted my parents and Harry's mother. But instead of leaving it to Madame Hooch to sort it out, you two decided to give an exhibition of muggle dueling, did you?
Yeah.
Have you any idea what you've...
I wanted death. Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
I
crave violence.
Yes. However, Umbridge barges in with another decree in hand, declaring she now has sole authority over all student discipline. Over McGonagall's protests, she permanently bans Harry and George from Quidditch. And they're like, this can't be serious.
Hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
She says, may I help you, Professor McGonagall? Help? What do you mean, help? Why, I thought you might be grateful for a little extra authority. You thought wrong. I love McGonagall.
Yeah.
And she's like, now you two have better listen carefully. I do not care what provocation Malfoy offered you. I do not care if he insulted every member, family member you possess. Your behavior was disgusting. And I am giving each of you a week's worth of detention. Do not look at me like that, Potter. You deserve it. And if either of you ever, and that's when she... does all her grossness. Educational decree number 25.
This is the thing that pisses me off the most. Because listen, they did attack him. Yes, they were provoked. But McGonagall's right. He just lost. Of course he's going to be angry. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is where I'm not okay. She also bans Fred Weasley, even though he was never involved in the incident. Umbridge also confiscates their brooms.
She says, you and Mr. Weasley here, and I think, to be safe, this young man's twin ought to be stopped too. If his teammates had not restrained him, I feel sure he would have attacked young Mr. Malfoy as well. I will want their broomsticks confiscated, of course. I shall keep them safely in my office to make sure there is no infringement of my ban. But I am not unreasonable, Professor McGonagall. The rest of the team can continue playing. I saw no signs of violence from any of them. Well, good afternoon to you. What? What? I hate her. I've always hated her. And I don't use the word hate very lightly. I'm not one of those children. When I was a child, I wasn't one of those children who was like, I hate you to my parents. Because first of all, that was not taken kindly in this house.
No, it wasn't.
No, the word hate in different languages, the word hate is very strong. It engenders certain feelings.
Yeah.
That it doesn't in the English language for some reason, because the word is used very frivolously by a lot of people.
Yes.
So I was never one to use it very lightly. I can say I dislike things. I really dislike things. There are very few people in my entire life that I've said I hate. And I think I've said it about two people. Literary characters, however. That's another thing.
Yep.
Some of them are written to be hated.
Yep.
That's just what it is. She is one. I hate
her. She is the one.
I loathe her.
She is the one.
I detest her. I don't know what other words there are. You want
to
know
why?
Because she
is the legitimate opposite of what you believe a good teacher is.
Yes.
Because you know what a good teacher is. You know that a good teacher will correct you, but nurture you at the same time.
Yes.
Versus this teacher who does not care about what you like, who you are. They just want to take things away, to strip you until you're just... nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She lives to put students down.
And it's not just living to put students down. It is physically harming somebody in your care.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, abuses of power should never be tolerated. And by abuses of power in a school setting, for example, it's never okay for a teacher to initiate intimate relationships with their students. And I'm talking on any level. It's not okay. Once you get into higher academia, it happens. Professors date their TAs. Professors date their research assistants. The mentors date their mentees. It happens. Do I agree with it? No. But at that point, because they're adults, there's nothing. They're two consenting adults,
so...
So if they're okay with it, then there really isn't anything you can do unless there's something written in the contract that doesn't allow it. But, you know, once you get into lower levels of education, ew, don't do it. That's gross and nasty. And there aren't two consenting adults, so stop. So taking away from that, you should, a person in power, a person in a position of authority, like Snape, for instance, shouldn't use his position of power to make students dread their existence. But he does.
But you know what it is.
But even that, I'm going to say he's not, obviously not as bad as her. She literally created a magical pen that uses your blood as ink and then carves things into the back of your hand as you write it so that if you continue writing long enough, it scars you. Her being a teacher permanently scars students.
Like, literally.
Like, emotionally and physically.
Yep. But you know what I realized just now as you were talking about Snape for a sec?
Mm-hmm.
He spent his, he prided himself on his magical ability, on being a wizard, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I say yes, very tentatively, because I want to see where this is going.
So, where you think that he would have his... Like, where he would go through his rite of passage, where he would fully be able to embrace who he is at Hogwarts, correct?
Possibly.
For it is the magical school that is most famous in Europe. Let's be real here.
Sorry, in the UK. Yes.
Sorry, Durmstrang and Beauxbatons, but when people talk about Hogwarts, they go like, Hogwarts is the best.
Continue.
He... Instead of being a leader, instead of being a role model for students,
mm-hmm.
like he had hoped to be, because it seemed like he cared very much about sharing his magical prowess because of the spells that he created. Because they even said Snape, in his first year, knew more spells than people who were in their seventh year, correct?
Continue.
Instead, he was bullied and made to feel lesser than. And so to regain respect, he bullied people. And it happens to, listen, it happens to be children,
no.
which is completely not okay. But.
That's where you lose me.
No.
Continue.
But I understand the really unstable, weird path his decision making went. If it goes... I get respect by being feared. It makes sense. Not that it's... I'm not... The thing... This is where people make a mistake. Something being understandable does not make it acceptable. Correct?
Correct.
And so people jumble that up all the time.
I agree.
Something being understandable does not mean that it's okay and that it's acceptable. It means that you understand why they're taking the actions that they're taking. And so I understand why Snape is the way that he is, though I disagree with it.
So I understand that train of that thought, that line of logic, that line of thought, that train of thought, whatever you want to call it. Uh-huh. However, if he wanted to regain his respect, he could have done it by being, by just being an amazing teacher. He okay. could have done it by just being an amazing head of house, because he is the head of Slytherin House. Mm-hmm. He could have done it by, you know, becoming a potions master outside of Hogwarts and selling all kinds of potions that nobody else has the patience to make, because apparently witches and wizards, adult witches and wizards, are lazy.
Canon. Continue.
He could have done it in all these ways. Uh-huh. He could have been a dick to the other teachers. He could have.
Which?
He could have, which he sometimes is, sometimes isn't.
He walks the line.
Yes. I draw the line at providing of understanding, because this is, I'm going to explain. Uh-huh. I draw the line at understanding his train of thought once he starts to verbally abuse children in his care.
So,
and the reason I stop understanding is because, as an adult, there are certain things you just don't do. Even if you were bullied your entire life, even if you were treated like crap by certain people, because I'm gonna be really real for a second. Part of my elementary years, those years that, you know, the first few years that Snape was bullied by whoever he was bullied by, I also had my fair share of bullying. Did that make me a terrible teacher when I was a pre-K teacher? Or when I was working at the mental hospital, essentially, mm-hmm. that I worked at? No. That made me a more compassionate person. There is something legitimately wrong with him that he thought, oh, you know how I'm going to regain my power? By taking my frustration and my pain out on children who aren't the cause of it. Because if he had if he was just a dick to Harry, I would have understood.
You're going to bring up Neville, right?
If he was, no, I'm going to bring up the entire Gryffindor house. I'm going to bring up everyone who isn't the Slytherins.
But the thing is that he favors Slytherin, but he never really goes out against anyone besides Harry and his friends and Neville. And the reason why he goes after Harry is because he looks like his dad, who stole the woman that, to him, stole the woman that he was in love with since he was 10 years old. And then Neville, who could have taken Harry's place and the league would still be alive. This is, hey, surprise. It could have been Neville instead of Harry. It could be Neville Longbottom and the
Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
Although his name is Neville Longbottom.
It sounds terrible.
I mean,
it sounds really, really bad.
That's why he's not a main character. That's why
those book series are so good. Percy Jackson sounds sick. Harry Potter sounds sick. Yeah. Charlie Bone, sick. That series is a little less well known, but it's pretty cool.
Tristan?
Oh, we're getting there. Okay, anyway. I want to change his last name. I do.
Just do it.
I will.
Do the thing.
I'm going to do the thing. So anyway, that's why Snape hates Neville. Because it could have been Neville instead.
Right. But don't.
Damn it. Why the hell are you here? Why are your parents alive? Why is the woman I love dead? And that's why he hates Neville.
But Neville is just as innocent a victim as anybody else. He didn't do anything. He wasn't there.
But that's being logical. He's not a logical person.
Don't be a teacher. Then don't be a
Dumbledore.
Teacher. I can't.
He's dead. I'm assuming it's 2021.
Yeah, he was 117
years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, but the weird aren't going to keep him alive.
We don't know how long wizards live.
Well, you know what?
I mean, Nicholas Flamel lived to be 660-something years old. He was 665 in 1996.
Yeah, because he had powerful Wheaties every morning.
In 1992, actually. My bad.
Anyway.
91?
Yeah, but it's 30 years, bro.
91. Sorry.
30 years.
Yeah. But still. Still.
Still.
I can't go talk to him. Remember Hogwarts?
He's also...
I can't get there.
He's also not real.
You shut your mouth. How dare you speak vicious truths. Anyway.
So let's go back. Let's finish it. Because we went everywhere.
We went everywhere.
In the common room, Angelina frets over... By the way, I saw the post. Sorry, I can't. I'm the worst. About how like Angelina does not get enough credit for being the outstanding Quidditch player that she is.
She doesn't.
Where she is a staple for the team,
mm-hmm.
while Oliver is captain, then is made captain, and continues to like do well, and tries to field a team that she thoroughly believes in.
Even when at every turn she gets stopped.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she like, doesn't.
She's the Quidditch star. Everyone later on.
Angelina is our queen.
Yes. I'll skip the whole later on thing. Anyway, frets over losing her team beaters and seeker, then goes to bed. Only Harry, Hermione, and Ginny are left in the common room when Ron arrives, still wearing his Quidditch robes.
And he's like, I shouldn't have become, what is it, the keeper?
Yeah.
I'm the worst. I should step down. What was I thinking that I could do this? And Harry's like, don't you dare, because guess what? Me and your brothers got banned.
Yeah.
and if you leave, half of our team is gone.
Yep. When he hears about Umbridge's permanent bans, like you said,
mm-hmm.
Ron says it's the worst he's ever felt, to which Harry agrees that it's the worst he's ever felt as well. Hermione, looking out the window, tells him something that that cheers them up. Hagrid is back.
So, and that's literally what the last line is.
Yep.
So, what was it? Hermione got up and walked to the window away from the argument, watching the snow swirling down against the pane. Look, drop it, will you? It's bad enough without you blaming yourself for everything. Ron said nothing but sat gazing miserably at the damp hem of his robes. After a while, he said in a dull voice, "This is the worst I've ever felt in my life." Join the club, said Harry bitterly. I was going to say Barry bitterly. That's awesome. Well, said Hermione, her voice trembling slightly. I can think of one thing that might cheer you both up. Oh, yeah? Said Harry skeptically. Yeah, said Hermione, turning away from the pitch black, snow-flecked window, a broad smile spreading across her face. Hagrid's back.
Yes.
Bum, bum, bum!
I
did the hands and everything.
You did.
Y'all couldn't see it, but I did it.
There are hands with that. I think it's really like, dun, 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 and it's like an eye raise thing.
Yeah.
But you add hands because you just like
we're you Latino, like jazz hands. We're Latino, we gesticulate. It just is a thing.
No, you just like jazz hands.
I don't. Jazz hands. Spirit fingers. Jazzy fingers. I had to. I'm sorry. I know you guys couldn't see it, and you would probably roll your eyes at me just like Al rolled his eyes at me right now. But I had to.
Okay, so that's that.
That is that.
Yes.
Yes.
So we went all over the board. So whatever you took from this episode, I'm sorry.
Hey, it was good. It was good.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
We have our moments. We have our moments, but I think we eventually get there. We
talked about psychology of unstable people and stuff. I don't know, bro.
This is why people join us, though.
Dude, it went too far. Next.
No, we didn't.
We
We might have. Okay, we're going to end this now. Love you guys. Bye. Okay, maybe we went a little far.
We went a little far, bro. I'm telling you.